Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How Dogs Learn by Mary R. Birch and John S. Bailey. Narrated by Christopher Solomini. Publisher's note: this audiobook is packaged with bonus material, which has been included on the first audio and MP3 CD. If you downloaded this audiobook in a digital format, please visit Tantor.com and type How Dogs Learn into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then click on PDF Extra 1. When prompted, enter the access code TRAIN to access the bonus material. Forward. The alliance of the practical art of animal training with the science of behavior is relatively recent. Of course, animal trainers must always have been somewhat familiar with the concepts and principles of the science of behavior, or they could not have developed the useful or entertaining behavior of their animals. And behavior scientists have long studied animal behavior as a part of their science. But relating the practical tools of animal trainers to the science of behavior nevertheless results in some clear gains for both fields. Scientists gain another area of application in which the adequacy of existing knowledge can be evaluated, and from which new lines of scientific investigation will emerge when existing knowledge proves insufficient. Trainers gain by having their many techniques and rules integrated into a coherent system consisting of a small number of basic concepts and principles that serve as the basis for a larger number of derived relationships. Such integrated knowledge is easier to learn, easier to teach, and easier to apply consistently. Discovering failures in the fit between practice and science is also of value. Rules and practices of questionable scientific status are likely to be false rules, or they may suggest instances where our existing scientific knowledge is insufficient. Also, scientific knowledge that is not currently a part of the trainer's technology may form a basis for the new practical applications. In some respects, the main topic of Mary Birch and John Bailey's book is the use of rewards or reinforcers. There is no doubt that professional animal trainers are generally well aware of the importance of rewards in their training. But because the concept is familiar, there is some tendency for it to be oversimplified. The listeners of this book may be surprised at the complexity, or better, the richness of the subject matter involving rewards. Well covered are the differences between primary and secondary reinforcement, between positive and negative reinforcement, and also the vexing and easily confused distinction between negative reinforcement and punishment. The sensitivity of behavior to the relation between rewards and the context in which the rewards occur, stimulus control, is also well covered, as is the sensitivity of behavior to the relation between reward availability, the passage of time, and the occurrence of previous unrewarded responses, schedules of reinforcement. The variables that alter the effectiveness of rewards and subsequently alter the probability that the rewarded behavior will actually occur, that is, the topic of motivation, are also given careful and thorough treatment. Especially useful to the trainer, I think, is Birch and Bailey's even-handed and careful coverage of punishment, a topic that is seldom dealt with adequately in popular presentations of behavioral science. Because this topic, more than any other, raises ethical issues, and because the main message is often an admonition against excessive use or any use of physical punishment, the realities and complexities of this very important variable are often neglected. The fact is, many environmental changes that do not in any way involve physical pain function as forms of punishment, in the sense that they decrease the behavior that preceded them. This means a great many events affecting both trainees and trainers function as punishment. It is a topic that is just as complex as reinforcement, and must be as well understood by trainers and by dog owners in general if they wish to effectively understand behavior. Another outstanding feature of this book is its coverage of factors that can strongly affect behavior, but are not related to reinforcement or punishment, not even to learning, and are the results of medical conditions, genetic background, physical features of the environment, and other things. The material dealt with in the section on behavioral diagnostics has only recently begun to receive appropriate consideration in applications involving human behavior problems. The animal trainer studying this book will be well ahead of many behavioral practitioners working with humans with respect to these very important but often overlooked causes of behavioral excesses or deficits. This book can be used in several ways. Trainers can simply study the book the same way they study any of the technical works in their field. It can also function as a handbook, where subjects can be looked up as new or puzzling situations arise. For the second use, it should be on every animal trainer's bookshelf for future reference. The book would be excellent for informal group study, with a chapter or two being the basis for discussion as part of a monthly professional meeting of trainers. The book could also function as the substance of a formal workshop or course. In many respects, this book covers the content of an undergraduate course in learning and behavior, but with most of the examples taken from dog training. In fact, a person who mastered the material in this book would have a better start in my junior-level course on learning and motivation than the usual students who come into the course after several other undergraduate courses. If I had to characterize this book with a single sentence, I would say that it is practically very useful without sacrificing scientific and technical accuracy. Jack Michael, Ph.D., Department of Psychology, Western Michigan University. Introduction. In the past few decades, there has been an exciting new development in dog training, the arrival of the sophisticated trainer. Most competent modern-day dog trainers aren't happy anymore with simply training dogs. They want to know how dogs learn, as well as how and why they behave and respond to specific learning situations. The people whose dogs they train want to better understand their dogs as well, so they can take their training to a higher level and communicate more clearly with their dogs. Today's trainers and dog owners are buying books, going to seminars, joining dog training clubs, participating in dog training discussions on the internet, subscribing to training magazines, and joining professional organizations that can teach them about the science that underlies the principles of animal training. Operant conditioning is the part of the science of behavior that explains the functional relationship between environmental events and behavior. It is a key component in explaining how all organisms, including dogs, learn. This science is called operant conditioning, and this book has been written to provide dog trainers and owners with an explanation of the scientific principles behind how dogs learn. Operant conditioning is a very important part of the science of behavior. While its applications in dog training may be newly appreciated, it is not an entirely new concept. Behavioral scientists have been studying the field since 1938, when B.F. Skinner published his landmark scientific work, The Behavior of Organisms. For decades, as the operant conditioning researchers developed and tested theories in their labs, animal trainers were busy out in the real world teaching animals new skills in applied settings. These trainers were often completely unaware that there was a science related to what they were doing. This science could both describe what was happening in training sessions and provide a way to make training more effective. Historically, the development of the science and theories of operant conditioning by researchers and the practical development of new procedures by animal trainers moved forward along parallel lines. These lines finally crossed in the 1940s, when scientists got involved in training animals for military use and animal entertainment acts. By the 1980s, operant conditioning was receiving attention in a variety of animal training settings. thousands of dog trainers had discovered there was a science that could predict how dogs would behave in certain situations. They began using the language of the science and attempting to apply its principles in training settings. Because the current interest in operant conditioning is so great, there is a need for a book that is understandable, yet scientifically accurate. When we started writing this book, we discovered that a great deal of the popular literature related to training dogs is full of mythology and pseudoscience. The fact is, the real science is fascinating enough on its own. Part 1. A History of Animal Training. When we look forward to the future of dog training, it's also very useful to look back and see where we've been. Although dog training has changed enormously in recent decades, the early trainers played a critical role in developing the world of dog training as we know it today. Understanding these trainers and the scientific principles they were learning from helps us understand how we ended up where we are today. Chapter 1. The Scientists. How operant conditioning developed in the lab. Beginning in the 1800s, behavioral scientists were in their labs discovering the principles that laid the groundwork for the 1938 arrival of operant conditioning. At the same time, without using the technical terminology or being aware of the scientific theories, dog trainers were using many operant conditioning methods. We'll look at what the scientists were doing in this chapter and what the dog trainers were up to in the next. Does the name Pavlov ring a bell? Modern theories of behavior began with the work of Ivan Pavlov, 1849 to 1936. A Nobel Prize winner, Pavlov was a Russian physiologist who studied digestion in dogs. In the course of his research, Pavlov observed that the dogs he was studying would salivate before food was placed in their mouths. He thought the dogs were associating the lab assistants or the sound of the door opening with food. He tested this theory by ringing a bell just before feeding the dogs. After a number of trials, ringing the bell caused the dogs to salivate. Pavlov's work in classical or respondent conditioning explains reflexive behavior, like salivation. It does not explain voluntary behaviors. Salivation, in Pavlov's model, is called a conditioned reflex. The development of such reflexes has come to be called Pavlovian conditioning or classical conditioning. We'll discuss this topic in more detail in Chapter 7. Pavlov's work, also referred to as respondent conditioning, which means it deals with reflexes, came before operant conditioning. His theories explain why a dog begins to salivate when a food dish is rattled or its owner carries the dog food bag to the feeding area. Thorndike's Law of Effect. While Pavlov was busy in Russia studying the kind of learning that involves reflexive responses, in the United States, Edward Lee Thorndike, 1874 to 1949, began studying the effects that different consequences have on new behaviors. This was important groundwork for the development of operant conditioning. Thorndike is known for the law of effect, which basically says that responses that produce rewards will tend to increase in frequency. In other words, if you do something that brings you a reward, you're likely to do it again. Thorndike's law of effect says responses that produce rewards tend to increase in frequency. In one study, Thorndike placed a hungry cat in a box and recorded the amount of time it took the cat to remove a barrier to get out of the box. He then placed some food outside the box and discovered that eventually it took less time for the cat to remove the barrier. The food was an incentive, and the cat figured out the task faster and faster. Thorndike's work in the 1800s provided the foundation for all of the treat training we use with dogs today. Watson's Little Albert. J.B. Watson, 1878 to 1958, was a psychologist who worked at Johns Hopkins University and the University of Chicago. He is credited as the father of modern behaviorism. At a time when not much was known about ways to change behavior, Watson emphasized the need to get away from concentrating on thoughts and feelings and to move toward the scientific experimental study of behavior. Watson conducted a well-known study with an 11-month-old boy named Albert. This study is sometimes referred to as the Little Albert Study. Watson and his colleague, R. Rayner, conditioned a fear reaction in Albert. Initially, Albert was allowed to play freely with a white rat. Then, a loud noise was presented whenever Albert reached out and touched the rat. The noise was loud enough to startle Albert. In 1 week, whenever the rat was presented, Albert would cry, even without the noise. He also generalized his fear to other things, including a dog, a rabbit, and a Santa Claus mask. Watson used respondent conditioning, in this case, the startle reflex, to modify Albert's behavior. Watson's work can help dog trainers understand what has happened when they are dealing with extremely fearful dogs. Watson is the person who started the movement in psychology that is called behaviorism. Behaviorism is the science of behavior, while operant conditioning is one part of behaviorism that can be used to explain the relationship between environmental events and actions. Skinner and operant conditioning. B.F. Skinner, 1904 to 1990, was influenced by both Pavlov and Watson. He expanded Watson's work on behaviorism when he described the science of operant conditioning. When he was a doctoral student at Harvard University, Skinner discovered that he could systematically change the behavior of rats by giving the rats a food reward for pressing a lever. When Skinner became a faculty member of the University of Minnesota, this work was expanded to pigeons. Although Thorndike is often credited with being the first to outline operant conditioning concepts in his 1911 work, Animal Intelligence, Skinner was the first to widely publicize this new technology. In 1938, Skinner published his findings in his book, The Behavior of Organisms, a landmark work that was the first to fully define operant conditioning. With its publication, the science of operant conditioning was born. Skinner eventually joined the psychology faculty at Harvard University, where he wrote numerous books and papers and created the foundation for applying behavioral principles to humans and animals outside the laboratory setting. In recent years, many dog trainers have attended seminars where they have learned to use a clicker. Clickers are conditioned reinforcers, as described by Skinner. Many trainers, filled with excitement, have told us about this new training method that was invented by the person conducting the seminar they attended. In fact, clicker training was being used by operant conditioning experts in the 1940s. In 1951, Skinner described the use of the clicker, which he called a cricket, in his paper, How to Teach Animals. A conditioner reinforcer depends on some conditioning taking place. In other words, you have to associate it with something pleasant before it will reinforce a behavior. Partly because of Skinner's efforts to move beyond the lab, operant conditioning started as a science, but it has expanded to become both a science and a technology for changing behavior. In addition to widespread applications in dog training, Skinner's early operant conditioning work in the lab underwent a dramatic evolution and ultimately had a major impact in education, rehabilitation, business, and industry. The first textbook. Fred S. Keller, 1899 to 1996, was a classmate and lifelong friend of Skinner. Although Skinner taught at Harvard and Keller at Columbia, they were colleagues throughout their lives. Keller is well known for his work on a teaching method known as Personalized System of Instruction, or PSI. This is an individually paced, mastery-oriented way of teaching. Keller's visionary work in the late 1950s and early 1960s had many of the same components as today's computer-delivered instructional programs. In 1947, at Columbia, Keller and William Schoenfeld began teaching the first college psychology course to use Skinner's methods. For the first time, undergraduate psychology students taught rats to respond to stimuli to obtain reinforcement. In 1950, Keller and Schoenfeld published their textbook, Principles of Psychology. This was the first text for the exciting new field of operant conditioning. Applied Behavior Analysis. Researchers in the 1950s and 1960s got busy evaluating how operant conditioning could be used outside of the lab with humans. Using Skinner's model, they studied the behavior of children in schools, children in institutions, adults in a variety of settings, and patients in mental institutions. Most of the operant conditioning studies done with humans in the early 1950s were demonstrations that were not practical and did not result in a person acquiring functional skills or having a better life. But in 1959, Jack Michael and one of his doctoral students, Ted Allion, changed that. Working at a psychiatric institution in Canada, Allion and Michael trained institution staff to use operant conditioning procedures to modify patient behaviors, such as refusing to eat, being aggressive and disruptive, and engaging in delusional talk. When this important work was published, the power and potential of operant conditioning to change people's lives became clear. Applied behavior analysis is the term used when behavioral procedures are applied in real-world, non-laboratory settings to improve the life of a human or animal. In 1982, Michael coined the term establishing operations. These are events that affect the value of a stimulus to act as a reinforcer. You'll find more information about establishing operations in Chapter 3 and Chapter 17. In other words, the effectiveness of a reinforcer may be different at a particular time or in a particular situation. In dog training, understanding the idea of establishing operations can often shed light on a dog's behavior. For example, a dog that is accustomed to eating at a certain time may engage in some unusual behaviors when dinner is late. A normally well-behaved dog might start rummaging in the garbage for food, licking crumbs off the kitchen floor, or sneaking food from its owner's plate. For this dog, in this circumstance, food deprivation has become an establishing operation. Food has become a powerful enough reward that the dog is willing to throw that advanced obedience title out the window and break the house rules. Getting organized. Following the publication of Michael and Allion's first applied behavior analysis study, scientific journals and professional organizations were founded to encourage professional development and to support research. In 1958, the Society for the Experimental Analysis of Behavior, SEAB, was organized. SEAB introduced the Journal of the Experimental Analysis of Behavior, JEAB. JEAB is devoted to basic rather than applied animal and human research. In 1968, to meet the needs of applied researchers, SEAB began publishing the Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis, JABA. Basic and applied researchers formed the Association for Behavior Analysis, ABA, in 1974, in order to promote the experimental analysis of behavior in applied settings. ABA provided applied researchers with their own organization, conferences, and professional network. In May 1994, at the annual ABA conference, animal trainers from across the country came together to form the ABA Animal Trainers Forum, a special interest group of ABA. These are trainers who want to study the science of animal training. Members of the forum produce a newsletter, give presentations at the annual ABA conference, and work on projects related to animal training throughout the year. This group became the first professional forum to give large numbers of animal trainers and scientists the opportunity to participate in the same professional organization, thus furthering the understanding of the science behind animal training. Animal training leaves the lab. In 1938, Marion Cruz was B.F. Skinner's research assistant. Among other duties, she trained the rats he worked with. In a twist of fate, one day she was bitten by a rat. On her way to get treatment, she met Keller Berland, an ambitious graduate student in psychology. They were married in 1941, just as the United States was going to war. Skinner thought the new science of operant conditioning could be used to help the war efforts. With the Berlands as trainers, Project Pelican was started. Project Pelican trained pigeons to guide bombs that the Navy called pelicans. By 1942, equipment had been designed that made use of operant conditioning procedures to teach pigeons to guide a projectile by pecking when a military target was displayed. When Project Pelican ended in 1943, Marion Berland went on to train animals for commercials and animal shows. Her trained chickens were used to advertise farm feeds. By 1947, Animal Behavior Enterprises, the Berland's company, had set up thousands of animal shows nationwide. These animal shows were often seen in malls, fairs, or arcades. Ducks and chickens were placed in Skinner boxes, which are cages with a plexiglass front. Through operant conditioning, they learned how to turn on lights, play baseball, dance, play small pianos, and do other tricks in order to receive food when a key was pecked. More sophisticated acts for television included cows, rabbits, and pigs. One pig entertained audiences with scent discrimination exercises and by vacuuming, going on a simulated shopping trip, and other behaviors. The work of Keller Berland, Marion Berland Bailey, and Bob Bailey was the first commercial application of the science of operant conditioning. In 1951, Marion and Keller Berland published a paper titled Applied Animal Psychology that described how operant conditioning can be used to teach animals. Their work went mainstream in the 1950s with stories in Time, Life, and the Wall Street Journal. Miami's Parrot Jungle hired the Berlands to develop parrot acts. Marine Studios in Florida also worked with them. Their work developing a dolphin act for Marine Studios resulted in the publication of the first manual for dolphin trainers. When the Berlands got involved with dolphins, Bob Bailey, a zoologist from the University of California at Los Angeles and the Navy's director of training, entered the picture. Bailey worked with the Berlands to establish the Dolphins at Sea program for the Navy. Military work with animals continued over the years, and in 1965, Bailey developed an ambush detection system for the Army that involved using operant conditioning to teach pigeons. Keller Berland died in 1965. Marion Berland and Bob Bailey continued the work of Animal Behavior Enterprises and were married in 1976. Over the years, the Baileys trained more than 140 species of birds and mammals by applying the sound scientific principles of operant conditioning. Bob Bailey is known for his work in using a bridging stimulus, a method of using a time bridge between the animal's response and the delivery of a primary reinforcer, such as food. Primary reinforcers are those reinforcers that are related to biological drives, such as food and sex. Along with Skinner, Keller Berland and the Baileys were the true pioneers of many of the animal training practices we see today, including the use of conditioned reinforcers such as clickers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?